What's up, fight fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, June 26, 2023, and this week's episode, Topuria's Breakout Party. We'll talk about the weekend in mixed martial arts, UFC Jacksonville, and the wild results from the night in Florida. We'll talk about the latest in MMA news. PFL has hit another little issue ahead of their playoffs, and it has led to quite the reaction from the public. And the UFC had a absolutely ridiculous amount of fight announcements. We'll break down everything before talking about this coming Saturday's UFC Vegas 76 main event, Sean Strickland taking on Abus Magomedov. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Hello, Double G. Good morning. I had a cake pop for breakfast. I'm feeling great. Let's do this.
What flavor cake pop?
You know, I don't know. What? It was just delicious. The cake was white. So vanilla, I guess it's vanilla.
All right, some vanilla cake. All right. Just checking. I was like, what you mean you don't know what you're running on?
I just ate it. They all taste the same to me. Delicious and sweet.
Okay.
I followed it up with a glass of Athletic Greens. If anyone from Athletic Greens is listening, they want to sponsor us. Good stuff. So I balanced it out.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah. It was strategic,
and,
yeah.
The yin and the yang.
Of course, yes.
Well, you know who is all yin, no yang, all gas, no brakes, all action, and really all dominance. Ilia Topuria. This past Saturday, taking on former interim title challenger Josh Emmett. And obviously, there was a lot of talk about where is Josh, where is Ilia, the ceiling for Ilia, where can Josh get to at, I believe he's 38 years old. And really, I hate to say this because Josh is a nice guy, but he became the proverbial stepping stone for Ilia on Saturday night. Ilia just absolutely a beautiful performance. Josh Emmett, amazing first round, really got after it, and I think even Ilia was like, oh, you know, this guy has something to prove, and it felt like we might be in for one of those kinds of bangers. But as the fight wore on, Josh just became more exhausted. The grappling, you know, it just completing the takedowns wasn't there. Ilia's ability to slip and move the shots, shot selection, speed, output. About the only other thing, just the sheer durability on Josh Emmett, which I believe it was at the end of the fourth round, kind of felt like it was now starting to become a detriment rather than an admirable quality. It was just not Josh Emmett's night. And I know because we're talking about, you know, he was so close, obviously, with that fight with Yair, and, you know, you obviously want that shot at the big one. But to have this one, it just kind of felt like that changing of the guard and just really a breakout performance for Ilia. Felt like they could have stopped it at the end of three. Ilia goes on to just kind of really get a stranglehold on that decision. Takes it, I think they said, one of the only 50-42 scorecards. Yeah. Only a handful of them ever in UFC history. So, in other words, just a historic beatdown in terms of the scorecards. That is how good Ilia performed. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, it was an exceptional performance for Ilia Topuria, and hard to watch for, you know, when you're looking at Josh Emmett and thinking about his career and all that he's accomplished. I really thought at the end of that, when he was talking to DC, I thought he was going to retire. You know, they're cutting his gloves off, but he didn't say anything about it. Just that he was going to, you know, basically go back to the drawing board. But, you know, his face was just beat to heck. And it was hard to watch at a certain point, him just getting continuously popped in the face. But I got to tell you, man, the toughness in Josh Emmett is a unique one. You know, there are fighters in the UFC that push through with that much damage and that much, you know, against them. But the way he came out in the fifth round was really impressive to me. You know, Danny Castillo's telling him, you got to go for broke, basically. And having the ability to still try to do that after everything he'd been through in those previous four rounds, I was very impressed with that. Truly, truly tough. He was not, I wouldn't say he was close, but he had some good chances there in like the first minute of round five before Topuria took him down and was like, okay, we're not gonna give you another chance for that. But you're right. First 2 minutes of round one, Josh Emmett looked great, came out trying to make a statement. It just couldn't keep it up. That pace and the speed, the hand speed, couldn't keep it up. And then he reverted to that sort of old school MMA style with the big stance and the looping overhand punch. It was just, he kept trying it and trying it and trying it throughout the whole fight. It never landed. And I think he was a little bit stuck in thinking that if he just got, it's like gambling, if you just put in one more quarter in the slot machine, you might win the big one. And he just kept trying to put in one more quarter, pull the slot, and it didn't work. The handle, I should say. So, he had some moments there, but it was really a complete showcase for Ilia Topuria. And it wasn't, I mean, Topuria basically going into the fourth round, he still looked untouched in the face. He got a few marks at the end there, but Josh Emmett looked terrible. And I hope that, his ear, did you see his ear? Just like flopping around. It was hard to watch, not gonna lie. And I don't know what the future holds for Josh Emmett. It's one of those things where if he gave me a call and asked me what I thought, I would say, you already did so much. You have great highlight reels. You've made it to very nearly the top. I mean, fighting for the interim belt, that's pretty much as good as it gets. Hold your head up high and walk off into the sunset, because the competition is going to be as good as Topuria or better, right, as we progress throughout the year. So I don't know if Josh Emmett, I don't know what kind of place there is for him in the UFC except for the gatekeeper status. And do you want to be that guy? I don't know.
I mean, I don't want to make this the Josh Emmett, eulogy for crying out loud, but I
No,
do
it's
get what you're
not, but I'm just
saying.
38 years old and.
It was tough, and when that fight with Yair in hindsight, is it just kind of like we talked about it? Those statistics, right, Henry Cejudo, like over 35 winning a title fight. If you're middleweight or below, something like that, it's tough to do. Look, whatever is next for him, I'm sure they'll figure it out. I feel like he'll try to get one more in. Don't want to go out the way those last two went. But let's talk about Ilia now. Very bluntly, when I look at, for example, featherweight and then lightweight, because Volkanovski was so close against Islam, right? It was competitive, and there's, I don't want to say no interest. It's not red hot, but people wouldn't mind seeing Volk try at 55 again, right? I think that's fair enough to say.
Yeah.
When I look at how this is all lined up with Charles, the BMF title, Islam, not fighting again till October, you put all this together, I don't see 55 possibly enticing Volk, which is, barring an upset for Yair Rodriguez, which I do recognize can happen. Ilia really is right there. I don't think he needs to fight a Max Holloway if Max beats the zombie coming up in, what is that, August? I think all of that together, this was the kind of performance you want for Ilia. Young, good side of 30, perfect timing for Volkanovski. If they were, let's say Yair beats Volk and they want to do a rematch. You probably have a good timetable to fight Max Holloway if he beats Zombie later this
Yeah.
year, but once again, do you need it? No. Could you wait? Yes. How bad do you want to stay active? How much do you this and that? And not for nothing, I feel like Ilia in this moment, maybe not quite to the same level, but I think that he's got a little bit of that Brian Ortega quality that we haven't seen in a contender, in a long time. And what I mean by that is when Ortega came in, he had a great champion in Max, right? But then, you had this, long-haired dude, was really popular, was performing well, bilingual a bit and all that. Ilya with everything. I mean, he's got obviously his Georgian background from Spain, just very well groomed. The dude always dresses well. The hair is good. The beard is good. Very marketable guy. Speaks perfect English. All of that together, this is like, I recognize, this is a very marketable star. Fights exciting, well-rounded, good style, all of that stuff. That makes it a very big breath of fresh air. And when you talk about featherweight that now needs new people behind, Volkanovski after everything he's done and who he's beaten, I think he's in the perfect spot. I want Ilya for the title. If Volk and Yair run it back, then do Ilya versus maybe Zombie if it pulls off the upset, but most likely Max.
Yeah, I agree with you. That makes perfect sense. That MMA math checks out. No issues there. Topuria's saying he's, very patient and he can wait for the title shot. If not, he'll take Max in Spain, which, it's good to put it out there. But that, I don't think the UFC is going to Spain anytime soon. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Not on the docket.
Not on the docket. I don't think so. So I hope he doesn't dig in his heels about the Spain thing because it seems more likely that he'll fight Max Holloway if he doesn't hold out for Spain with Max and will fight Max anywhere, then I think that's going to happen and then he'll get the title shot after that. There's no way Yair Volk doesn't go. We don't have a rematch. I just can't imagine that fight's not going to be a freaking crazy fight that demands round two.
Okay, I mean, not to tip it too much. We still have one more week before we start talking about that. But no, I get you. Like with obviously we're gonna find out next Saturday on the future of featherweight and a lot of that stuff. So I think that just kind of sets up our pieces perfectly, which is what I always like. I always think it's very nice and healthy to be like, all right, we have something to look forward to, and we can just enjoy the one coming up without a lot of that talk. Let's go. Co-main event, Macy Barber, Amanda Ribas. I mean, I gotta say, I think on paper, this one, Macy kind of was dealing with the response to a lot of the other ones, right? People felt like it was controversial with Miranda Maverick, then, handles Montana De La Rosa, then another close one that some people felt was on that line with Andrea Lee. And then you have Amanda Ribas, who's obviously very popular on a roll, didn't look bad against high level flyweights like Caitlin Chookagian and all that. And it kind of felt like, all right, whose skill set will play out, and can Macy, kind of return to that form, or will Ribas kind of do what she's kind of done for a while now? And really, just Macy Barber. I mean, to take it back, it kind of felt like she thought Amanda was hitting on her boyfriend or something. She just came out there with that kind of aggression, like that high school want to really put it on you kind of ferocity, channeled her inner Jessica Andrade, really just beat down. They had a good scrap in the middle. Ribas kind of tried to throw back, and Macy took a few, but really that. Just like that dog on the bone, once Macy smelled blood, she was after it, and that was just very vicious. What did you think?
Oh my God, dude, that was crazy. Macy Barber gave a savage performance. Like, I was sitting there with my mouth open thinking, oh my God, what did Amanda Ribas do to you? Because she wasn't just beating her, she was punishing her. And as an MMA fan, it was awesome to watch. Like, it was just freaking okay. There, everyone has those fights that they would recommend to an MMA newcomer. Say, you gotta watch this fight, you gotta watch that fight, Robbie Lawler, Rory McDonald. Those are one of the classics, right? And if you think about women's fights, you might mention Jan Jacek, Rose Namajunas, Shevchenko. But if we're talking just this year and someone's like, give me a recent fight that's killer, man or woman, I would recommend Amanda Ribas, Macy Barber. The brutality, the savagery, the intensity. I mentioned Sarukian last week, how he was the way he finished that fight, like he was fighting for the last plate of food in the prison cafeteria. This was primal in a similar way. I mean, she was just getting after it, man, like viciously, making the sounds with every strike. Usually that drives me bananas, but this time I was like, yeah, you get in there, man, you scream. Nothing against Amanda Ribas, but I felt a little bit like I was watching, I was in the Coliseum, in the old gladiator days. This was a heck of a fight, man. I didn't follow up the aftermath. Did they get a bonus, both of them, one of them? Do you know what happened?
I could have sworn it went to Macy on that one,
Okay.
like performance bonus.
Dude, I mean, she just brutalized her. And so, we've seen Macy have moments where she's displaying this, but for me, this fight was nonstop. Even when she was getting hit, she was coming back hard. Her footwork looked better. Her striking looked better. Is this her first time with Alpha Male?
No, she's been there for a few fights now.
Okay. She looked much improved, man.
Yeah, I mean, look, that team, I know obviously Uriah gets a lot of the credit, but Danny Castillo and them just really have, all these guys who have fought for a long time have really transitioned into, great coaches. And I think you see that, Song Yadong, who we're going to announce, a fight coming up. Obviously, Yan Shannan, Josh Emmett, still up there. All of that together, I think that Macy, you could see, is one of the great beneficiaries of that environment that they have over there. And,
Yeah, even Sage Northcutt, I
oh, yeah,
mean,
of course.
yeah, can't forget Super Sage. So they're like resurging, I think, with some great fighters. They're back on the upswing, and it's, man, Macy Barber, dude, scary. Scary in a good way.
Oh, yeah, they're all awesome. I think that, for Macy, I know she wants that rematch with Alexa Grasso. Obviously, there's a couple people in the way, but I acknowledge, five-fight win streak. Now, on the strength of this one, you do maybe start talking about a top five fight. I don't know who you really go with right this second. I mean, Caitlin Chookagian stands out. I need to double check if she has a fight, but. Yeah, with to tip the hand a little bit, you're introducing Rose Namajunas to flyweight, Erin Tyler in action. Both of those, Erin looked like she's ready for a title shot. Tyler was almost champion. All of that together does make for a very crowded room at flyweight. So, I think that Macy may have to wait a minute. Let me see. Yeah, there's no fight right now for Chookagian. I don't know, where she's at, if it's injury or just some downtime, but that's the fight that stands out to me. I think you beat a veteran like Chookagian, who has only ever lost to those high-level women, then you probably set up a title shot or title eliminator for yourself, depending on the timetable. You know what I mean?
Dude, this is unrelated to fighting, but Kayla Chookagian changed her name? Kaylin
Got married.
Sermonara? Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
Didn't
that's when the this let's be honest, the men never change their name
Never changed her
unless
name.
you're Ian Gary, but like the women just like, oh, Michelle Waterson Gomez,
I
what? And
know.
it's
Yana
like
Santos. I was like, oh, Yana Santos. I've never seen her before. This is interesting. I'm like, wait a minute.
yes, I
Yana
have.
Santos. Or the worst one was Joanne Wood. I was like, oh, I guess she didn't want to be Calderwood anymore. She just cut it down.
Oh
Short.
my God, yes. The amount of people it's like, wait, why is she joining this? Like,
Asked you too.
people don't follow enough people on, people don't pay attention on Instagram. You just fly through the stories and it's like,
Yep.
oh, because she married her coach, John Wood, and oh, yeah.
She should have been, how women do the hyphenate, like Waterson Gomez. She should have been Calder hyphen Wood, and she could have still been Calderwood.
Yeah, I mean, some of them, like Paige VanZant, I believe she said she's legally like Paige Vanderford, but it's like everyone and their mom says Paige VanZant,
Yeah,
so
her
it's
stage
like,
name, I guess. Yeah.
yeah. Like the from WWE, the Bella Twins, now they're trying to be like the Garcia Twins and all that, so they can whatever, and it's like, this just doesn't sound right, you know what I mean? So.
Wait, they're trying to go to like use their. Were they originally Garcias?
Yes.
Yeah, right? They're. Yeah, okay.
Because WWE still owns the rights to the Bella Twins name. So, like, there's a
Oh.
lot of licensing and name, image, likeness going on. So, I think that there's a Everything has to go through WWE whenever they try to license something new
Ah,
under the
boy.
Bella name. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Not to get too
Okay.
far off.
Yeah, I
Do you
gotcha.
have anyone else for Macy before we move on?
I mean, if Jessica Andrade wasn't already, just stepping up to the plate, I would have thrown her in the mix, but she's busy.
Also, if I'm being honest, I prefer Jessica at 115. Like, I know she could do
Yes.
25, she's all right at 25, but I feel like, how do I put this? At 115, her qualities are just, they just work so much better. I think at 125, yes, you could still get after it, but those girls also, they have their Wheaties and all that. They could keep up with your physicality. Whereas at
Yeah.
115, yes, you still give up height, but I feel like the physical stuff is more on the level playing field.
For sure. She's really whiffing at flyweight also because she's already shorter than everyone at strawweight, but now it's like they're bigger and stronger. And so yeah, it's a challenge. But I mean, look,
I wouldn't
she's
mind it stylistically. I get what you're saying.
yeah, no, but just in general, the lady is just I mean, you've been saying it since day one. Gangster. Gosh almighty.
Oh yeah, and we're going to talk about her later today too. But yeah, for the record, I think Chookagian and Barbour, let's get it. Perfect fight for both of them, I think, right now.
Yeah.
Before we move on, David Onama.
Ooh.
Man, just that was pretty gangster himself, if I'm being honest. I was just like, oof, nasty. It was just a really good one. No notes besides awesome. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, awesome. It wasn't even, he didn't rear back. It was a short uppercut right on the button, followed it up with some other killer shots. It's one of those where I can't remember his opponent's name, wakes up from hitting his head on the canvas, but he was out on the way to the canvas. That was brutal.
Oh yeah, it was a good night. There were some tough ones. Obviously, with the Austin Lane, Justin Toffa with the eye poke and the no contest really sucked. And for everyone involved, like, I'm glad they kind of pulled it for his safety, but it just sucked. You could tell the guys are like, oh man, all this hard work, and you never want to see it go that way, but I think they made the right call. More finishes throughout the night. A lot of people stepped up for that Florida crowd, so I think it was good. Like I said, just really capped off by an amazing performance from Ilia and, looking like a future champion out there. And I think that's the best compliment I could give to just how he capped off that whole night, ate up the crowd, with that just ovation, just really played to it. I thought it was great. And then Friday night at the PFL. So this one, I watched the fight back and I really, I have a lot of thoughts, but just to break it down, a spot with the playoffs on the line, at least for Nitant Schultz, I have to look back at the points where they were at for Manfio. These guys, teammates, Nitant, two-time champion, Manfio, one-time champion in the lightweight division, not just best friends, training partners. If I'm not mistaken, they said that Schultz is the godfather of Manfio's son.
Yep.
I mean, just BFFs. Let's just say it like that. And they had a fight, and also the broadcast said the corner says nothing. They give water, they towel them off, they do the ice. There is no coaching one against the other on either side. And we watched this fight play out, and quite simply, there is no sense of the urgency that would suggest that, hey, you guys are trying to go for this $1 million, all this on the line, leave it all out there. It felt very methodical. It felt very controlled. And what a lot of people said, that was a practice session, sparring session. Neither of them were really going after it. And PFL looked at that fight. And they make the executive decision that Manfio and Schultz breached the agreement that you sign when you accept the fight, that you will try to win to the, I believe the quote is, best of your skills and abilities. And as a result, they pulled Schultz from the playoffs, who now qualified on points, and bumped up Shane Burgos. What is your reaction?
Dude, I think I believe if it really was in the contract that you have to perform to the best of your abilities, and they clearly did not, especially with the not getting the corner advice. Like, it's like everyone was in on it. Let's just get through this, is what it felt like. I think PFL had a right to make this decision. Was it the best, correct decision for them to make? I'm not so sure. I'm happy for Shane Burgos, right? But, you're talking about a two-time champ. That's kind of crazy to not let him go through on points. He earned the points. He won the fight. So I'm a little bit on the fence here. It's like, when you see a boring ass fight, excuse my language, it's disappointing. It's upsetting. Carlos Barza, Rose Namajunas, even Nathan Schult mentions Francis Ngannou, Derek Lewis. There are others. Those two fights, though, that I just mentioned were very hyped up, lots of eyeballs, lots of attention, and so the sense of disappointment was great. I don't know how much people were looking forward to this matchup here and expecting, fireworks, because for the other two, Rose, Carla, Derek, Francis, we were. And so this kind of was just like another boring fight, which happens all the time. So for PFL to be so outraged by it is very shocking. But and I think it would have maybe warranted more of a talking to, or you can put out a statement and say, we were disappointed by this fight. This is what we think happened. They're partners and they didn't want to push each other. We have the option to pull Nathan Schult from the tournament, but we're not going to do that. But just let everybody know, we don't want to see this again. I think that's what they should have done, because it's just kind of it's a little too severe. I'll just put it that way. It's a little too severe for what we saw. But somebody with the power must have been super pissed off. Do you know ultimately, like, one person make calls the shots, or was it a group of people that
I think it was behind the scenes because the night of Ray Sefo was just kind of like it is what it was. But I think that after backlash and all that, it led to more of that reaction from the higher ups.
Do
But it
you think
wasn't
it?
just like one
Oh,
guy.
okay. Do you think it was too severe? Should they have just given him a warning, or was this the right move to establish to the world like PFL doesn't mess around?
A good question. I want to acknowledge that I think that you are always in a you have to pick a lesser two evils spot. They were going to always have to do a move that's going to be tough. So, once again, one of those call it down the middle. I've heard some thoughts about, well, PFL knows the situation. Why would they pair them up in the regular season? Let the playoffs and the seeding do it if that's what's going to happen. They could have fought someone else. This is true, but then I would also remind everybody, no promotion can make you, quote, fight somebody. They're not going to send the hitman to the gym and make sure you're running and hitting the bag and cutting weight. They were offered each other. They signed on a dotted line that said they're going to fight each other. They could have both put their feet in the sand and said, we're not going to do it. This is what we want. Give us someone else. Now, mind you, I acknowledge this isn't, Francis Ngannou, Jake Paul, Kayla Harrison drawing their line in the sand. This is, guys who don't have that kind of, leverage and pull. However, I think it comes down to the fighter. I hate to just use, this very unrelated metaphor, but when you're at a restaurant, one of the things they tell you when you work there, if there is something wrong with the food, even if you didn't cook it, you didn't set up the plate, you just happen to be that one guy who walked it out, if there is something wrong with it and you see it, you are that last line. And they do give you the power, even if you're just like the little assistant running food, you're not even really talking to customers or cooking, that part of if you saw something, part of you are now part of the accountability. As the fighters, as the athletes who do have to accept the fight and sign it, if you know that you are not going to honor the conditions on that contract, especially they weren't hurt. There's not injuries to speak of and all that. You are just gonna do this kind of handshake agreement behind the scenes. I hate to say it, but that was on the fighters. Yes, you could talk about PFL put them in that position. Yes, and all that. And I'm like, PFL gave you paperwork. You signed saying you would do something and you didn't do it. And I think that while you could ask PFL not to do it, I think that you have to acknowledge that the fans, I get it. People already pay for ESPN Plus because of UFC. It was on big ESPN. You were not, quote, paying for the service, for the product. If you're a fan who paid for a ticket in Atlanta, and you know that two of the athletes did that, I'm sorry, but now PFL is kind of in that pickle too, because it's like, well, fans want their money back. We got fighters not fighting the way they should, and we're out there taking money. This is a slippery slope. And so, yes, you could say PFL shouldn't have put him in that position. I think if you sign the contract saying you're going to do something and then you don't do it, and it's not because of injury and all that, I'm sorry, but now you put yourself in a position where you can't walk that back. Because now this is all on you. You weren't hurt. So I think, unfortunately for Schultz and Manfio, I think, yeah, they something had to happen. And I think removing Schultz from the playoffs to remind them, hey, you can't be trying to pull that kind of move when this is a business and we are trying to get more fans in the seats. I think that's big. Because what's the biggest thing for PFL? All of this and all that, they're not selling out a, Madison Square Garden. Big Madison. I'm not talking the theater. I'm talking the big house. The Staples Center, now Crypto Arena. The Honda Centers of Houston. We're talking about a big arena. They don't have that gate revenue. And if you want to start generating it, the one thing you don't want is fans thinking they're going to pay for a ticket and the fighters don't even fight the way they're supposed to all the time. So I do acknowledge action had to be taken. I feel bad for Schultz and Manfio. And let's be real, you don't play MMA. It's a fight, injuries can happen. I understand they probably don't feel good about doing that to their brother in arms, but something has to be done, right? Because you can't just do that to the fans and think you're going to walk off with it. And like I said, I get it. They don't want to hurt each other because they know what it means to the family and all that. But once again, where do you go then? You can't sign the contract and then not do it.
You're absolutely right. That was the problem right from the beginning. They signed the contract, agreed to put in their best efforts, and then they didn't do it. And PFL's pissed, fans are pissed. And the message has been sent pretty clearly, right, to all PFL fighters. If you do not put your best foot forward, we're going to do this. And it's not like you're taking just one purse, fight purse away. This is a chance to win $1 million. That's what the whole point is. So it's a big deal for Natan to be pulled out, and now for Shane Burgos to get put in.
I mean, there's also, I want to acknowledge, if Manfio, look, because remember, it's very easy for me to say they should have gotten to fight different lightweights. Remember, all the other lightweights have to get matched up for fights that make sense too. And so there is that acknowledgement that it's not apples to oranges, oh, well, they'll just get somebody else. It's not that simple. The roster isn't robust like the UFC. So I do acknowledge there might have been like a, well, either I take this fight and get paid or I do not, and then I just don't fight, plain and simple, because PFL's like, all right, well, we're already moving on. Only one of you was close to playoffs, and it's like, what? So all of that does come into play. But once again, talk about the contract. You say you'll do it and you don't. You kind of take that power away to walk it back.
I
And
mean,
with,
look, yeah,
go
go ahead.
ahead. No,
No,
you
no.
go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna make a silly joke, so go ahead, finish it. Finish your
when he
excellent
asks
thought.
Ngannou, like, hey Francis, what about this and that, and I'm like, that's a completely different case. Francis was gun shy, but Derek Lewis also had a hurt back in that fight, so neither of those men, one mentally couldn't fight to the best of his ability, two, the other one physically couldn't, and that's why we got that atrocity of a fight.
Oh man.
Anyway, did you still want to make your joke, or we
Well,
good?
sure. I was just gonna say, Rocky fought Apollo, no problem. So these guys could fight each other. That's all.
They weren't best friends yet, when they fought in the movie. There was that little thing at part three. We don't
At
know
the
how
end,
hard
at
they
the end,
fought.
ding, ding, at the very end of the movie where they fight each other, they're in just the gym and they were willing to beat each other up. That's
Last time I checked, we didn't see how hard they fought in the gym, but
what
okay.
we
Fair enough, fair enough.
did,
Anyway, I don't want this to overshadow Sadubu C. Did you see this?
Yes. Oh my God.
40 miles per hour, by the way, with the swag walk-off KO, gangster. Man, that was awesome. Look, I get it. UFC, one of these is probably going to be the front runner for a knockout of the year. That was style points to the max. No notes. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, style points to the max. And the best part is that he was calling it out. I'm gonna make a viral knockout. And then he did it. And like you could see him trying. He was doing the spinning back kick, the head kick. He was setting him up with low kicks, to the leg, to the body. And I'm like, oh man, here it comes, here it comes, here it comes. Well, bam. And like he landed it earlier with just like the toes, I think, on the head. This one was just like heel to the jaw. I mean, I don't know. It was just, he sent him. He sent him, I think he sent him like jumping in the air.
I mean, one of the things they, one of them talks about, look, when you become champion, you become instantly like 10, 15% better, just mentally. I like that Sadabu, he's really matured into this version of himself. He's one of the guys for PFL now. As they're in this transition, like all of them, him, Mercier, Brendan Loughnane, kind of feeling themselves, and I think just showing you that talent is out there outside of UFC and Bellator, and I just like that he's embracing it. He's not shying away from it. He's out there doing his thing. Well spoken, nice dude. I think all of that comes together perfectly for him, and it's a great launching point to the playoffs. And we've talked about it. We've touched on it a little bit. You got a lot of familiar faces. You've got a couple surprises, obviously Pinedo, who shocked Brendan Loughnane, took him out of the tournament. Shane Burgos is in it, and stylistically that is also a fun guy to have in the mix. All of this comes together really beautifully, and so we talked about this PFL having all of these hiccups. You can still package this into a great second half of the season. I just think you have to really just the delivery has to just really be done right, and I think build that anticipation. I've been hearing this about the movies, because like so many people now, it's like, why go to the movie theater? I already pay for all these streaming services, and they get all the movies rather quickly, right? And it's like you have like Tom Cruise does this. I'm blanking on his name, but the guy who's dropping Oppenheimer coming up soon. It's like, okay, well, like everybody is aware that streaming has changed the game. So now you have these guys who are really pitching it as like, no, you have to experience it in a movie theater. The Top Gun Maverick, no, this movie is made to be experienced in a 300-foot IMAX, all this other stuff, right? I get it. I think that PFL needs to embrace a little bit of that. You need to almost sprinkle this stuff like, hey, not just, oh, this event is coming, be like, nah, this fight is big. You almost overdo it a little bit. And every now and then you gotta just hope the guys deliver, but it's like make people feel like, wait, what's going on? Like, who's gonna be there? Why are they there? Why is this? All of that little stuff can really get the PFL this season taken off. Not just, oh, well, they're fighting. Where's Jake Paul at? Where's Francis Ngannou? No, get the interest there. That's how you build it. Because I'll give you a great example. I mean, Natalie, like, Bellator doesn't have another fight for like a month. So, like, all of this in between, now is the time to really get fans like, oh, in 1 month's time and this and that, start planning that out. I think that's what PFL could do.
Yeah, I mean, they have this highlight reel kick now that they can use. Put this at the front and, get your best ones and start making a mid what do you call, like a mid-season reel to get us pumped up, because you're right, you know, they're in one respect, this ban, this demotion for Natan Schuld, I like what it will probably do is that it, you know, first it gives them a little bit of more presence in the news media, MMA media flow, stream, I should say. And then it sends a message right to everybody else, like, you better show up, man. And so hopefully that will result in more exciting fights for the second half.
Yeah, I think, like I said, all of this could come together really beautifully. I think it just has to be positioned and take it off the right way. And I think build that anticipation for these things, not just, oh, the fights are going to be on this day.
Right.
I think that's what they could do really well. Fight announcements, fight announcements, fight announcements. We could probably do like a whole like mega show on everything we're about to get through. So I'm going to try to keep it really concise. We're going to work everything chronologically, okay?
Okay.
All right. So, a lot of star power coming up. The summer schedule more or less is complete, if you ask me. So, first off, coming up August 5th, Jessica Andrade stepping in for Verna Jandiroba to take on Tatiana Suarez at UFC Nashville. Once again, like I said, August 5th. For Tatiana, you got to think title implications have to seriously be on the line. I don't know if you could bump Yan Shonan out of her spot, but depending on the timetable after Zhang Weili and Lemos, the winner of this one could set up a title eliminator, if not a title shot, if you're Tatiana in particular. What are your thoughts on this one?
This just further serves to, you know, elevate the gangsterness of Jessica Andrade, right? Like, it's not super short notice, but she just fought, when did she fight? May.
Yep.
She lost to Yan Shonan. That was a pretty good beating she got there. And just to pop up and say, yeah, I'll take this one. Tatiana Suarez is, like, the biggest, size-wise, the biggest fighter in the division, right? And Jessica Andrade is probably the smallest. And it's like, she doesn't hesitate, and I love it. And this is not an easy fight for Jessica Andrade. Tatiana Suarez could probably just ragdoll her if you're just looking at comparing sizes. But, you know, I don't know if that's going to happen. We can break it down later. But just freaking super impressed with her, man. Just her willingness to get in there.
I mean, a couple years ago, this fight, a lot of people, like when they were both on a roll, I think a lot of people really loved the idea of this fight. I don't know that I like Jessica taking it so fast after being stopped by strikes. Mm-hmm. The Aaron fight, she got choked out, and it's like, all right, short notice, stepped up.
Yeah.
Didn't get put unconscious. I felt differently about it. This one, I'm like, I don't know that I like the idea of that Jessica trying to turn it back around to take on a Tatiana. Now, look, Tatiana isn't known for being a home run hitter. That being said, her wrestling and her skills, I think she looked a lot more of a fully versatile fighter than she did before she left. And so I think that raises some questions on what we'll get in terms of Tatiana executing against Jessica. Then maybe we wouldn't have like 2019 before Tatiana got hurt and everything.
Yeah.
Now, 292, Boston, August 19th, got quite the set of bantamweight fights. Probably the biggest one, Henry Cejudo gets his wish. He gets Marlon Chito Vera. If you told me they were going to make this one five rounds, I wouldn't mind it, to be honest, to add to that party in Boston. This one, I think, is just huge. This one is kind of like win or go home as a title contender. Because when I look at Henry's age, when I look at how many years Chito has been at this, I do think that with the competitiveness at bantamweight, this one is to say, hey, who is the guy who gets to stick around and still try to get into the conversation? Because I think for the loser, two losses in a row against the kind of competition they took on,
yeah,
isn't a good spot in this moment of bantamweight. So I think that this fight is huge. What about you?
It is. And there is, you know, stiff competition in the bantamweight division right now. So yeah, a loss will you can't bounce back from this loss very quickly like you could have in maybe earlier bantamweight days. There's too many big names in the rankings now. So this is a good fight, man. I mean, Cejudo is, look, I'm gonna assume this is like a last push to get back to the title shot, and then whatever he's gonna do if he gets the belt. But just off the top of my head, just from what we've seen of them recently, I think Cejudo can win this because Chito Vera just lets himself get hit too much. So anyway, this is UFC 292 is Aljo O'Malley, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. You got to think, anything happens, people are
Right.
probably thinking about short notice, backup fighter, so to speak.
Who gets like if someone from the main event, Aljo or what's his name, O'Malley gets out, is automatically going to Cejudo, or do you think they consider Chito?
I think that if O'Malley were to fall out, they'd go Chito. If Aljo falls out, they'd go with Cejudo.
Okay.
Plain and simple.
All right.
Rob Font, Ricky Simon. You'll remember Rob Font knocked out Adrian Yanez while. Hold on. Sorry. Song Yadong and Rob Font.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I'm looking at my notes. Anyway, Rob Font, like I was saying, knocked out Adrian Yanez in April. Meanwhile, Song, you'll remember they had that short notice step up to be the main event.
That's right.
Beats Ricky Simon in the same month. I think that this is also good, and I also could see a scenario where the winner of this one takes on the winner of Cejudo and Chito. I think that's essentially what they're fighting for. If Aljo beats O'Malley, he's probably moving up to featherweight, and then Cejudo Chito fights Merab Dvalishvili. I think that's how all these pieces are lined up. But then you have Song, Rob. Winner of that one is number two in line. And then any number of things could happen with the schedule, but in my mind, that's how this is all about to shake out in August. What about you?
Yeah, I mean that makes sense. You always have your eye on the line there on the rankings and the matchup. So I'm gonna go with you on this. It makes sense. Just looking at what's about to happen, and this is April. Oh no, sorry. What is? Oh, sorry. Same night. UFC 292.
I mean, look, if stylistically good fight, I want to point that out. I think that card is shaping up to look really, really fun. Then a couple weeks later, Max Holloway taking on the Korean Zombie. We mentioned this earlier, August 26. Once again, another good one. Tyler Santos, Aaron Blanchfield, also on that card. This one, quite bluntly, this has got to be for the next shot at Alexa or Valentina. I just don't see another scenario. What about you?
I agree with you. Tyler obviously fought Shevchenko. Some thought she won. Blanchfield is just good, man. She's just really, really good. And she's moving up the rankings fast, obviously. Now she's fighting Tyler, so.
Yeah, I also feel like, I hate to say, but I feel like this always was the fight that needed to happen. I know people felt like, well, Blanchfield kind of gets to jump ahead. Because she took another fight instead of getting Santos earlier this year. You'll remember they switched to Jessica on short notice. This just makes all of the sense because they gotta wait for Alexa Valentina anyway, which by the time they fight still will not have happened. So I think that this just really works. Not for nothing. Maybe they step up and be a short notice replacement. You never know. So I think that it all happens just the way it's meant to. And then this one from left field, Rose Namajunas coming back to take on Manon Fior, UFC Paris, September 2nd. What was your reaction to hearing this one?
WTF, man. I mean, what has she said about, has she addressed the reason for moving up to flyweight? What's,
Nope.
wow. I was thinking about myself. What could her reasons be? Because I also couldn't find anything. Maybe she feels like she's just done it all at 115. It's not exciting to her anymore. I never thought the weight cut was a severe one for her, so I don't know how much of it is that. Not wanting to have to cut so much or just live that, a lot of fighters have to, in order to not cut so much, they have to sort of live a very disciplined life. I don't know if she was doing that for 115. but very surprising move. She's definitely tall enough for it. She's, got the length for it. So I'm gonna be very curious to see what she looks like at flyweight. Is she bulking up with muscle or just not cutting? What's the strategy here? And is this just like a Tatiana Suarez, right? Didn't she take one at flyweight too, just to get her foot back in the cage?
Yes.
So is it that? Is she just trying to do that to then go back to 115, or is this a permanent move? I don't know, but very, very surprising. And then my final thought was, oh man, could she, if she makes a run for it, could we one day see Nama Yunus Shevchenko? Remember, they trained for a little bit a while back. That would be a heck of a fight.
Yeah, you know what? So when I look at this, I am just a little surprised. I also feel like stylistically, maybe she's got to feel like 115 is always going to be right there with those wins over Zhang Weili. I don't know if it's an age, getting older, you feel like that weight cut is still huge. I don't know if it's just, I don't know. She just kind of feels like, hey, I just want to get back out there. This is not an easy fight. Manon is really good. Manon's right there too. And she's almost now very clearly in that Leon Edwards, Belal Muhammad, position, Benil Dariush. It's like she's got to do this long win streak while other people have, maybe with less fights, are now getting hyped up. So I do think that for Manon, very motivated, but for Rose Namajunas, I don't know, I guess I always see her as a 115, that at 125, I'm just a little, I don't want to say nervous, but I am a little hesitant to say how far can she take it, because with the layoff and everything, I just have a lot of questions and we still don't have answers. And now we've been given more, so I think it's, I'm really looking forward to hearing what she has to say about everything.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, all that's coming up. And then not for nothing, hearing Alexa Grasso, Valentina Shevchenko 2 will headline the September 16th card in Las Vegas. Mexican Independence Day. Usually Canelo fights on that night. Now Canelo's kind of off that schedule, if I'm not mistaken. Or I don't know, they might be trying to do something with Jermell Charlo. I forget the date on that. But we're hearing UFC is looking for Mexican fighters who want to fight on the card. So they kind of want to make it Mexico and Vegas, which I don't mind, but at the same time, I also feel like, well, if you're gonna do that, just do it in Mexico, but okay. Probably the most interesting wrinkle, this will be a fight night, not a pay-per-view, according to reports. And the reason being, or that we can surmise, the week before, they are doing the Adesanya fight on pay-per-view in Australia. And so they're going to T-Mobile. They're in another big arena. It's in Las Vegas, but it's going to be on television. What are your thoughts?
I like it actually. Yeah, it would have been more fun to see it in Mexico, more exciting for the Mexican fighters are trying to book. Yes, but there's plenty of folks here in the US, especially the West, Vegas, California, Arizona, all around the area, Hispanic folks will be flocking to watch this card. And I think it's kind of a smart move. Look, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Shevchenko has done a fight night before.
Yeah.
And so, she's game. She doesn't care. And this is going to get a lot of eyeballs, dude. You know it's going to be a killer fight. And I think it's a very smart move to do fight night in Vegas. So you're going to get a big gate and you're going to get big eyeballs on the TV. Free fight, essentially. Is, well, ESPN, right? Not ESPN Plus.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Well,
so
I mean, simulcast, but yeah.
yeah, simulcast, yeah. So to me, it's a smart move. And I don't know if Shevchenko is, or even Grasso is looking for, like, hey, I'm missing out on pay-per-view points now. Maybe it'll compensate them some other way, because that's the only knock I see for this card.
In all honesty, that completely skipped my mind. You know what? You are absolutely right. I low key would be a little pissed off. I think that's huge because I think part of them probably even would have asked, well, then just put me co-main event Adesanya so I can make that money. I
Yeah,
don't.
maybe they
Now I
have to
don't
cross
like
it up.
this.
I don't
Now.
know, because September 16th, I mean, that's a big deal, Maybe she was like, no, fuck it. I want to fight on Mexican Independence Day. And maybe they work something out. I don't know.
How much do you like money,
Take the
Natalie?
concessions. Take the
How much
concessions.
do you like
I
money?
know,
Answer my question. How
right?
much do you like
I
money?
love it. I can buy so many cake pops.
Yes, you know. So, look, as a fan, I appreciate it because it's like, all right, they're gonna have a good fight, and you're not asking the fan base to do like $200 right before, you know, $200 in the span of 7 days, right?
Right.
On the other hand, I do feel like that just kind of subverts the women because it's like, you know, you just named Alexa Grasso the number one pound for pound fighter
They
for the
did, yeah,
women
the
with
women.
Amanda Nunes retiring. And it's like, you tell me then she's not worth pay-per-view? That ain't right. And look, I understand business and all that, but part of me is like, ugh. I don't know. I guess I hope they have a great undercard. But yeah, that to me was almost like someone got the short end of the stick. And we talked about this a little bit, right? Like UFC is trying to set up all these pieces and someone starts getting the short end of it. This feels like a short end of it. Alexa and Valentina don't get the pay-per-view love. They don't get a chance to make the money, etc. And that's just where we're at. So it's like, you know. I get it as a fan, and yes, she probably wants the Mexico thing and all that, but why can't she have it all? And I'll leave it at that.
That's true.
Look, obviously that was a lot, and I feel like we missed even something. I just can't think of it because there were so many. But I'm gonna leave it at that.
Zuck and Musk.
Oh yes. Oh my God, there it is. What did you think of this?
I don't pull out my hair, but it's like just imagine me pulling hard. I mean, just throwing my popcorn in the air, frustration, disbelief. It's like you're already forcing slaps, as he calls it, Dana White, onto the world. Why are you even entertaining this dude? Like, of all the ridiculous fights that have been put out into the air and then brought to him at a press conference, a media day, how many times is he like, that's a gimmick, that's stupid? I mean, Ngannou Fury, he calls a gimmick, but this he wants to freaking see and put on? Get out of here, dude. First of all, I can't stand Mark Zuckerberg, but he can perform jiu-jitsu, right? He's at least capable. I don't think Musk has anything. And so it would just be Zuckerberg, going in for takedowns and, breaking his arm or something. It's so stupid. It's ridiculous. There's no, well, okay, would I watch it? Yeah, I'd watch it fine. But there's no reason for this. It's just Twitter nonsense, and it pisses me off even more because Dana White, the underhandedness of dismissing Fury and Ngannou and then trying to push Jones Fury, it pisses me off. And then what's wrong with him? Is he like Dana White's losing it? That's how I
Well,
feel.
he's pushing, he's wearing the shirt and all that, right? And, you know, obviously it got a lot of traction. So here's something that nobody I think is talking about. Elon and Zuck don't need UFC. If
Right.
you were gonna watch that, they can organize it. I felt like, to be honest, Dana was trying to get UFC. He wants to be a part of it.
Yeah, he wants to
But
get the funding.
it wasn't Dana A, this was all my idea. No, he saw an opportunity and he's like, oh yeah, I would totally promote it. And he's acting like these guys are on his roster or something. Like, no, he is trying to get a check. Because I promise you, they are not gonna roll out the octagon. They're not gonna get Megan O'Leary to do hair, makeup on the lights, get on the mic, you know. They're not going to do all that for free, you know, pro bono for Musk and Elon. They want a cut. They want the, you know, like sell the commercials and all that. The money goes to charity, all of that good stuff. You know, off the top of his head, how much would you charge for that pay-per-view? You know, he's just sitting there shooting the breeze up, probably charge $100. I have a question also. all of this stuff. Are you gonna do an undercard? Like, are you planning to put Musk and Zuck on the co-main event to McGregor Chandler? What are we doing? What are we talking about? Come on now. I'm gonna use these guys as an example. Are you gonna try to do Musk, Zuck, and then what, just an undercard? Like, are you gonna put Demetrius Magulov against Grant Dawson, third from the top or something on the pay-per-view? Come on now. So look, in terms of the skills, I think I get it. Like, who's that? I know Elon has his rocket. What's the Amazon guy?
Jeff Bezos.
Bezos. You know how they like do that
Yeah,
rich
his
people
penis rocket.
competing? Like,
Yeah.
oh, who's got the bigger rocket? Who can actually
I
get
mean,
it
it's
up to
literally shaped like
space?
a penis. It's just,
Yeah.
yeah, Blue Origin.
But
Yep.
it's like, who can get their rocket? Who's got the bigger rocket? Who could get the rocket up to space? And I'm like, that's all these rich dudes are doing. I could do this, bro. Come on and whatever. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, do you really care to see what that fight's gonna, this is like Dancing with the Stars.
Yes,
Bad
exactly.
dancing. Sometimes people want to watch bad dancing instead of good dancing. Some of the thriller fights, bad boxing instead of good boxing. This one, people just want to watch bad MMA over good MMA.
I mean, I just imagine the board members, the share like the board members of what's that company, Tesla, like
Oh
you really think they're gonna let him do this? Because he's going to get embarrassed, and then it's like there goes the mystique. Not that he hasn't already done plenty of, laughable things, but when you physically get embarrassed, it's different.
yeah. I
It's really
mean,
different. When you
then
get beaten by a man who sounds like Kermit the Frog, it's different.
God damn,
Can't take that back. Can't take it back.
you going in.
I'm going in, man.
Someone's losing their Facebook account.
I know. Well, I don't have. Well, I do have Facebook, but my everything, the Instagram and what's the other one, WhatsApp.
Meta.
Right now, when I get on my Instagram, it's going to be like this account has been destroyed.
What? Yeah, I just real talk, guys. Oh, if you're feeling the hype, do you care about an undercard? Do you care about them? What do you think is gonna happen? That's one. If there's one thing I would say is that if there was a scenario where they actually wanted to do this just for the spectacle, they don't need Dana in UFC. If anything, if there's one thing they maybe like, they like the idea of somebody already having the structure, so all they have to do is walk out and do the fight. They don't have to be in charge of how do we get an octagon? Who do we talk to about this? Where do we get that? Dana's just like, oh, I'm gonna do the same thing for Slap. Grab Dan Haley, Michael Bisping, Charlie Arnold. There you go, commentators and a reporter. Let's do it. I'll run the presser. Just come to Vegas. He has a jet. He gets to LA to Vegas in like half an hour. Easy. If there's one thing, they probably like that. But let's be real, they do not need to do the UFC. Dana's getting in this because he doesn't want Elon and Zuck to say we're fighting MMA. He wants the rub of them going out there and saying, "Oh yeah, we're fighting UFC."
Of course, yeah, they can wear the gloves, they can come out into the
Yep.
octagon, yeah. It would be, even though they don't need them, absolutely, you're right. It would be stupid not to just use the infrastructure that's already built, the biggest brand in MMA, get, the attention, the marketing power, because if you try to do it on your own, even with all their money, it would look stupid. The production value would never be as good as just, slotting themselves into the UFC production. So, I have a feeling they would agree to just going through the UFC, but yeah, it would cost them a chunk of the pie.
I mean, what else is I gonna say about it? It just, I don't know. It's just a lot. I forgot where I was going with it. But yeah, pretty much. I think that's it. Like, they would like the UFC structure. Oh, I remember. You know that like running joke is that like, how do you know someone's not a hardcore fan? They tell you, "I train UFC, not I
Right,
train
right.
MMA." You notice that Dana has never really. They don't make an effort to say, oh, that's an incorrect way to say it. Why? Because they want you to think that way. They want you to say, I train UFC, even though that's not right. Why? Because it's so amazing for the brand. Dana wants Elon and Zuck to say, I'm fighting UFC, not I'm fighting MMA.
That's right.
Because it would be so beautiful for them. You saw Jake Paul out there. Hey guys, I got a place you guys could fight MMA, and it's like, oh, here we go. So anyway, that's where we're at. I just get a kick out of it. These guys who are treating it like it's a real thing, and it's like, please don't tell me we are. Please don't tell me you believe this, right? But okay. Anyway, Sean Strickland, Abus Magomedov. If you don't know about Abus, currently on a win streak, born in Dagestan, was the number one prospect in Germany, or like number one ranked fighter from Germany, has had one UFC fight. Something I think a lot of people may not realize, he was like the season one finalist for the PFL when they still had a middleweight division. He was the
Yes.
number one on points. He got knocked out in the first round by Luis Taylor. I'm not gonna lie. When you look at the age difference and all that, you probably don't remember, but it was Taylor's Rocky story. Like, Taylor hasn't even, I don't think, had a fight since the beating Magomedov for the tournament money. So it's like, that kind of, Abus then leaves PFL. He does the regional thing, got picked up in the UFC. And obviously now is slotted into a high-profile fight with Sean Strickland. Now, Sean doesn't really need introduction. We know what he's got going on. Close fight with Cannoneer. Came back, beat Imavov at the beginning of the year. Now, really putting it all on the line. Now, Sean Strickland, volume striker, trash talker in the cage. Abus, to be honest, he reminds me of low-key like another Dagestani, originated fighter, Mr. Usman Nurmagomedov. Very long, lean, decent hands, decent power. If you watch clips, like a bunch of them are him getting guys out of there rather quickly, doing damage. And not for nothing, he does, it's kind of like, I don't know what it is, but it's just part of the DNA. He's got that Dagestani wrestling. Not Habib Islam, but he is a very decent grappler in his own right, but you could tell he's also very comfortable on the feet. Makes for a very interesting fight. Makes for, I watch the clips and I'm like, it's not a shoe-in that Sean Strickland rolls through this guy. I mean, and I'm gonna toss it to you from there. What do you got?
I'm with you. I was thinking the same thing. Sean Strickland has his very unique style. He sort of shuffles and keeps his hands. He has a low guard. It's almost like, by his chest. But he has good head movement. And even though he has an odd fighting stance, feet sort of close together, like he has good movement. But he's just basically standing straight up and walking right towards you. And yeah, it can still be effective. But Abus has has a more typical MMA style as compared to Sean Strickland, and seems to have power. Again, I've just watched some clips too. I can't remember the gentleman that he knocked out with a front kick to the face. I mean, his toes almost went in the guy's mouth.
Oh yeah,
Something with the D. I can't remember what.
not Stutzfus.
Yes, that's the one. That one.
Oh
That
yeah.
one. Not a D. That. And then finished him with some punches, brutal punches. So, just based on that, and knowing that he's a Dagestani wrestler, even though by way of Germany, I feel like Sean Strickland might be able to avoid some of those attacks, but he's just too upright. Two feet are too close together. He's too upright. His hands are too low, Sean Strickland. And so I think Abus is going to find a way. If he doesn't do it with the foot to the face, he'll do it with a fist to the face, or he'll take him down. So for all the fun that it is to watch Sean Strickland, and do interviews and even fight, I mean, he's had some great wins. I think Abus is going to beat him probably round three TKO.
Oh man, we're going with it, right?
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
not gonna lie, I watched that. So here's my thing. Sean Strickland has one extra week over Whitaker and Dracus. Imagine if Rob and, oh my gosh, DDP. I was trying to think what is the abbreviation? If either of them can't do it, can you imagine a scenario Sean Strickland versus Adesanya in Australia?
That'd be
It
hilarious.
would make so much sense. Rob has already proven he won't get pressured. If he's not ready to fight Izzy on short notice, he won't.
Right.
Dracus, his last few fights, he's taken damage en route to a victory. I don't like the idea of him trying to turn this around in 10 weeks. I just don't. You saw Gilbert Burns Belal Muhammad.
Yeah.
Gilbert handled Masvidal, still clearly just put too many miles on too quick and wasn't himself. I don't want that. Sean Strickland being so highly ranked over a boost and all that, it's just, I could see a scenario where he sneaks in there. But then I think stylistically, and I'm feeling crazy too, I'm going Magomedov also.
All
Second
right.
round. Let's
Oh,
go.
second round.
TKO.
Okay. I like it. I like it.
And I think people are going to be like, wait, what? More importantly, who?
Exactly.
And let's go from there. Yep. Anyway, do you want to hear some gossip before we get off the air?
Oh, love it. Sure, yeah.
Chael Sonnen just told Ariel Helwani that Zuckerberg called him and told Dana he'd fight Musk at UFC 300.
Holy moly. Fucking A, I'm already paying for it, so yeah, throw him in the cage. Who cares?
I can't anymore,
Apologize for the
man.
bad words, but yeah.
Sponsors, goodbye.
Goodbye, Spock. Goodbye, Athletic Greens. It was
I
nice
know,
knowing you.
right?
AG1 is what they call it now.
I
AG1.
want a Krispy Kreme sponsorship. I want to go through and they're like, oh, your donuts are right here. Oh, thank you. No, but here we go.
Okay.
Natalie, next week, UFC 290. International, okay, everything is going on. They have like 5 days of jiu-jitsu tournaments, fan convention, Power Slap was announced for Friday night, and of course, doubleheader Saturday, Volk versus Yair, Brandon versus Pantoja 3. What are your thoughts as we head into international?
Yeah, man, Volk and Yair, that's the one I'm really excited about, and just can't wait to see. I never thought Yair would be in that position, but the way he's been fighting lately, and Volk is still looking good, so freaking good fight.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they stand out. Whitaker Du Plessis, that's big. Also, little stuff like the last fight for Robbie Lawler, and he gets a great
Oh,
opponent
yeah.
in Nico Price. That's cool. Sean Brady, Jack Della Maddalena. I mean, Jack coming off that nice win in Australia, and
Yeah.
Brady's still up there. It's like, all of this, I love it. I think it's a very decent card. I get it. Maybe. Like when I look at the BMF card, there's definitely more sentimental value in that. You got fighters who have really been there and been big names and up and down more headliners from top to bottom. It's a decently matched card, 290, and I think it's going to surprise a lot of people. But yeah, I get you. It's just really nice. But that little grouping, there's just some really highlights in there that are more, maybe not because they're the biggest right now, but definitely will pop off when we get to fight night, so I'm
Oh,
ready
yeah.
for it. Anyway, we'll break down all of that before I head out for Vegas for that one. Until then, like, comment, subscribe. We'll be back next week.